rise for their majesties of Royally Obsessed, the podcast for all things royals.
Three cheers for His Majesty the King.
Welcome back to Royally Obsessed. Did you miss us? I missed you guys.
I missed
Rachel. I'm Roberta.
I'm Rachel.
And before we dive into all the royal news that we need to catch up on, so much has happened. It's pure chaos out there. Follow us on Instagram at Royally Obsessed Podcast. Also, send us an email, info@gallerypodcast.com. We love hearing from our audience. Rachel, chaos might be an understatement.
Should we take like a relaxing meditative breath together? Yeah. Like, I feel like we need someone to lead us. Like, I'm stressed, and I feel like the community probably feels that too.
I'm glad to be talking it all out with
Me
you
too.
Today.
I already feel better. Just like seconds ago, I was like, I'm stressed, and I just seeing you makes me feel better and getting a space to talk about all this. But what a week. I mean, we were off last week. I was at Disney World. It was all just bubbling beneath the surface. I tried to log off, but it was hard to ignore. Hope everyone listening is doing okay. We have a lot to discuss this week. The Where's Kate debate has hit a fever pitch. We're joined by Ellie Hall. I mean, long overdue. We're so thrilled to welcome her. She's freelance reporter now, but former royal correspondent for BuzzFeed News. We were getting her take this week on everything going on. Meghan and Harry were in Texas last week for South by Southwest. Prince Edward turned 60. Commonwealth Day. Camilla got the Barbie doll treatment. This was a fun note in the middle of all the chaos. And we have a lot more to talk about this week.
And now it's time for the weekly royal cocktail.
And to get through all of that, we always leave time for a royal refreshment. Today is no different. I feel like especially today we need a drink to get us through all of what's coming up. So I said in our last episode, which was at the end of February, that I would let you guys know how the Waverly Inn was in New York City, my dinner out, and it was fabulous.
That feels like a blur.
I know.
That was just like a week and a half ago.
I know. But I did order the perfect Cosmo, which I wanted to tell you.
Please
is now
tell us
my
everything.
New favorite drink. So a Cosmo is vodka, cranberry, triple sec, and lime. And the Waverly Inn version goes heavy on the lime, so it's very citrusy.
Ooh.
And makes you kind of, you know, do like a sour punch face. And it's really good.
Does it counter the sweetness in a – because I always feel like Cosmos are so sweet. I used to order them like five at a time at a bar when I was young, when I first moved here.
Yes. It's light on cranberry juice, which makes it less sweet. They actually wrote about it in the Financial Times, weirdly, on like a roundup of Cosmos in New York. And it's the palest one that this reviewer tried. And I agree. It was very, very light pink, almost not pink at all.
Okay.
But it was delicious. And so this is my go-to drink. And so I whipped it up and I'm sipping it with you now. So cheers.
Did you see any celebs? That was our question before you headed over there.
I did not that I know of.
You attract
so,
them too.
I know. Like Celine Dion sitting next to me at a restaurant.
Yes,
that was
amazing. The best.
Cipriani's. It was so dark in there, but I did read that Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce had a date there recently. I didn't know that.
Ooh. Okay.
But more importantly, Rachel, I want to hear about Disney.
Oh my gosh.
Really restrained myself from asking too many questions before this moment, even though you got back on Friday, just so we could debrief on the pod. So tell us everything.
I mean, it was magical. It was wonderful. We had a really great time. I feel like my highlight, this is weird, but and I felt a little like King Charles in my head, but the fireworks every night. Remember when we were, and I say King Charles because when we went to the coronation and the concert, the drone show, I was you know what, that is a really environmentally friendly move. And I wish that we did more of that. I think Disney could do that. But I did love going to the fireworks and seeing those. And Finn, it was kind of his first fireworks experience. And to have it all tuned to like Disney tunes makes you emotional. So I think that was a highlight for me. And just Cinderella's Castle. I mean, this is a royal podcast. I feel like it's like all that stuff sort of originated for
the fantasy royals
at Disney. I think the low was that right at the end of the trip, like the last day and a half, Finn got a 104 temperature.
No.
Like it wasn't like one of those like, oh, we can just like button up and like, you know, keep going. And yeah, he just was taken out. I mean, and you think about it, like you're touching so many surfaces at Disney. It was just a virus. We telehealth to New York, got him some Tylenol, and he just slept a lot, but it was kind of funny. And then I felt like a bad mom, but my husband encouraged me. I went to the Magic Kingdom by myself for the last day.
I love that.
And I actually thought of you because I selfie timered. I did all these photos of myself, which I did not show to Instagram, but I was like, I was just like running around. So I was like, I gotta take some photos.
Because we talked about it the last time we recorded, what was your favorite food moment? Was there one or no?
Okay, the food was rough for me. I really, I struggled. And you know what?
But the character breakfasts are like so
fun. The character breakfast we did, I did really enjoy what was served there. We did the Winnie the Pooh one at Crystal Palace, I think, which is at the Magic Kingdom. And the food was pretty good there. But I felt like our workaround was Instacart and DoorDash because we just were not finding a lot of food that we loved. And so when we wanted like some kind of groceries in the room and stuff like that, that seemed to kind of get us through.
Did you see the stroller parking?
I did. And we ended up not really doing a stroller at all. We ended up not renting one, and we just kind of like Finn ended up walking it, which is maybe why I got sick. He was just like, he did enjoy it.
Wait, I have one last question, which is the shot of Finn in that rope swing on the balcony. Where is that? It's such a gorgeous view.
Oh, yes. So the shot outside, we did one night at David's Vacation Club Rentals, and that was a bungalow at the Polynesian, and it was a worthwhile choice. Finn was sick while we were there, so that was a bummer, but you were right on the water. You could see the fireworks. It was incredible just from your room.
Is the bungalow like the penthouse suite? Is that what the – do you have like perks with it?
It's like out on the water. It's like you're just basically in a cabin on the water with alligators swimming beneath you. So I really enjoyed that.
I bet Finn loved that too.
Yeah, he really did. So anyways, it was a nice like palate cleanser and then coming back to a lot of royal news.
Well, you were so sorely missed, and I wanted to fill you in now that we're recording that I bought the Princess Diana remake of the Eagles jacket, the varsity jacket.
Wait, do you see my giant note in all caps? Because that was what I really wanted to talk about. What? Tell me everything. I know we're just preventing. We're just avoiding royal news
right now. I know. I know. We really are. We're like talking about the lighter stuff up top. So on Saturday, Mitchell and Ness, the store who recreated it, the official recreation, like they got the rights to recreate this from the Eagles. And so they said that we have a little more stock left because it sold out right away.
And you follow them on Instagram?
No, my friend does though and sent it to me. And it really was like, it just felt like serendipity because I missed the first chance to get it when it first came out because it sold out so quickly. And people were making TikToks about how they waited and waited and that's all their wife wanted and they didn't get it. And so when my friend sent me this, I was like, okay. So I went outside and waited at the store an hour before they opened. And I was the only one there. No.
Was there a line?
I was the only one there. I love it. Which is really funny. But
dedication, Roberta.
I think it's because there's a lot of resale ones online. So it's not that hard to find. But I am so glad I went in person because I tried on a bunch of sizes. It's so huge. So I ended up going with the extra small. It's very oversized. But I am so excited to wear it. It's such a good memento.
Please wear it to the office. I feel like this is your sheep sweater. This is really exciting.
Well, and St. Patrick's Day this weekend, it's like bright green, so it's perfect.
I mean, this was such a good move. I'm so excited that I like shrieked when I saw the pictures on social media. I can't believe I didn't lead with that.
I feel like I'm just like the sheep sweater, you know, like something that Diana wore and like has pictures of. And so it feels really, really fun.
That's what I mean. It's your sheep sweater. Yeah. Totally.
All right, moving on to our listener emails. We have two notes today. They're both a little short, so I'll read them both. One is from Emily, and reminder, this was after our last episode, which was recorded in late February. She says, Royal Roro here. Hi, Robbie and Rachel. I love your show, and I feel like I could email and weigh in every week. My thoughts on this week's episode are that at some point, the powers that be might have to address Catherine's medical situation in more detail, lest she be barraged with questions about it at every single engagement she attends for the rest of her life. I know she requires rest and privacy, and I fully respect that. Just wondering if not giving a little more info now would maybe alleviate the pressure once she returns to the public sphere.
It's a great cue up for our conversation with Ellie. Coming up shortly.
Yeah, exactly. And then the second note is from Heather, and we paraphrase this a little, but she writes that a friend of hers saw Meghan and Harry at a Texas restaurant in a nearby area to her, so she thought maybe they'll spend the night. She got up early and headed into the only hotel she could imagine them staying in, which is Hotel Emma in San Antonio. I looked this up. It's a gorgeous hotel. So Heather figured she'd hang out, have a nice coffee, and a lovely morning, even if they weren't there. She set up where the penthouse suite elevator is. That's so genius. So smart, Heather.
I mean, I would not think through these like smart moves. This is incredible.
But after a while, all she had seen were bridesmaids going to hair and makeup. Then she saw a man with an earpiece and she knew it had to be. She opened up her iPhone camera and waited. She writes, "When I saw them, I couldn't breathe. How do people follow royals to their engagements? I'm totally undone by seeing them. No paparazzi, no fanfare, no entourage. They looked great and happy holding hands as they quickly walked to their car. I got a wave and there were literally only 5 people in the lobby as they left." She attached the pictures as well. And I know that our audience really cares about what Megan is wearing. And she's just wearing a black sweater. But she is carrying that white Mulberry tote, which she did a lot.
This is trip. What – I didn't know it was Mulberry. This was going to be a note of mine. I am obsessed with that tote.
Oh, I am too. And it's not new. It's like from past season.
Oh, okay. Because I was like – I saw her carrying it at the airport.
It's like a bucket bag tote.
Texas.
It is really gorgeous.
It is stunning. Okay.
This is such a Rachel bag.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you.
Also, I figured we might have some rowers in Texas who had spotted them. So I love that Heather wrote in, and that's such good sleuthing. So brava.
And now, this week in royal history.
This week in royal history, Prince Edward turned 60. It's a big royal birthday this week. Happy 60th to Prince Edward, the Duke of Edinburgh. I'll take us through some quick facts and then we can chat.
Yes, please do.
He was born Edward Anthony Richard Louis, and he was born third in line to the throne to the reigning monarch on March 10th, 1964. He's now 14th in line to the throne. Charles was 15 years old at the time, which is a little bit staggering to me. 15 is pretty old for a sibling to get a brand new
baby. Yeah, that's a big
baby.
Age gap.
Charles was at Gordonston at the time. Fun fact, Edward's birth was the only one witnessed by his father, Prince Philip. Fascinating.
I feel like that's reflective of royal times modernizing.
Yes. I had to look up the New York Times announcement about it. They write, "The baby was placed in a cream-colored iron cradle originally made for his mother. Later, he would be transferred to the Moses basket, which was the property of the late Queen Mary, the present queen's grandmother." This furniture that they're putting the babies in needs to be checked for lead or something.
Yes. Good point.
It's like way too old. Sally Bedell Smith wrote in her recent newsletter that Edward might actually be the Queen's favorite, not Andrew. She says that they were closest.
Whoa.
Bagshot Park, where they live, is really close to Windsor Castle. And of course, Prince Philip taught Louise, Lady Louise, carriage riding. They had a very close relationship, we know. Also, Duchess Sophie and the Queen would ride horseback through Windsor. So she makes a very good case for Edward being number one in the Queen's book. Sophie and Edward's 25th wedding anniversary is coming up later this year, so it's a big milestone year for the Edinburghs. They both attended a birthday party for Prince Edward on Friday in Leeds, and Sophie gave this really heartfelt speech that had Edward and probably everyone else in the room in tears. Here's a snippet of that.
"Because I also wanted to take this opportunity to recognize another great milestone and share a small tribute to my darling husband as he celebrates his 60th birthday this Sunday." It's all right, darling, gonna hear 60 a few more times, I'm afraid. "Like my father-in-law, my husband never seeks compliments for himself. So when acknowledgement has come his way, it has always been a total surprise to him, which is why I am grateful for this chance to, for once, be able to publicly celebrate and compliment him. He was so happy and humbled when Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth made him a Knight of the Garter in 2006, and was equally delighted and moved the day His Majesty the King, who we are both incredibly proud to support, made him Duke of Edinburgh. Both he deserves in equal measure, and I am so proud of the man he is. He is the best of fathers, the most loving of husbands, and is still my best friend."
The "still my best friend" line killed me. Like, it was so sweet. And she's tearing up as she says it. It seemed just a beautiful moment between the two of them and a crowded room of people.
I know. And the camera pans to him and he's literally wiping away tears. It's very sweet. The royals are not this emotional in public. So it's just such a departure for them. He did get a birthday gift from the king, which was that Edward was appointed to the Order of the Thistle, aka the highest honor in Scotland. The Order of the Thistle consists of only 16 people, plus Queen Camilla, Princess Anne, and Prince William. So big, big deal for him. Last year, of course, his present was the Duke of Edinburgh title. I just want to ask you this, Rachel. The youngest of the Queen and Philip's 4 kids is now 60. Does that bowl you over?
I mean, I can't believe it, but I also feel like it makes sense too. I mean, the queen was how old when she passed? It's like it
96
just
96 or so. Yeah.
Time like sands through the hourglass.
I know. It's funny just because I think I've been looking at a lot of old photos of Edward to write this history section, and it's just sort of crazy. I wanted to do a quick calendar of royal events coming up because we haven't been on the airwaves since end of February. So March 14th, which is the day this episode airs, we will see Prince William as guest of honor and presenting awards for the Diana Legacy Awards. That is Thursday, so we'll stay tuned for that. And then this Saturday, March 16th, I mentioned in a previous episode, is the NAACP Image Awards. Will we see Harry and Meghan step out for that as they did? Who knows? The royal family usually also celebrates St. Patrick's Day in some way, and that is March 17th, aka Sunday. So,
wow, royal, I can't believe we're already at St. Patrick's. I will say I'm really excited about the 25th anniversary of the Diana Award because we've had Tessie Ojo on the podcast, and I feel like she was just such a wonderful guest. She came on in 2020. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that far back? And I feel like this is going to be such a fun occasion and meaningful one for her and her work that she's done. So I'm excited to tune into that one in particular and to see William there.
Yeah, and a bit of lightheartedness. It is heavy because it's Diana, but I also feel like they sort of need these engagements where they step out and, you know, it's just such a weird time for them. So this is like more of the norm, which they need.
Which we will be getting into in full. Yes. All right, let's talk Commonwealth Day.
All right, Commonwealth Day was this Monday. Just a few highlights. Prince William and Queen Camilla led the royals for the service at Westminster Abbey. Quite a few photos of them whispering and smiling. I liked Victoria Murphy writing in her Substack about how shocking this would have been in the early 2000s when we have, you know, Camilla, who's been vilified, of course, because of Princess Diana and Princess Diana's own son walking together. It's just so fascinating to see how time has
changed.
And
they look to be having a good time together, too. They were sharing some laughs, and the images that came out of this event were breathtaking.
I know.
I feel like they were just, you know, that the setting for Commonwealth Day is always so grand.
And it was so, I mean, it's just in the midst of all of the photo controversy and what's going on. And it was so overshadowed by that. I mean, I think that these pictures would have made the front page had there not been this other, you know, hoopla going on. So,
yes.
Anyways, King Charles missed the actual service, but he recorded a video message for it. We're going to play a little clip of that.
In recent weeks, I have been most deeply touched by your wonderfully kind and thoughtful good wishes for my health. And in return, can only continue to serve you to the best of my ability throughout the Commonwealth. My belief in our shared endeavours and in the potential of our people remains as sure and strong as it has ever been.
I guess I just want to discuss quickly with you, Rachel, the best of my ability phrasing. That raised a lot of red flags in the press, especially because it really echoes what the late queen started to say, especially toward the end of her reign. And, you know, we know that she said that in her first speech at 21, she would serve to the best of her ability. But I just it kind of made people question whether this was some sort of indication that we would see William on the throne sooner than we thought. What did you think?
I think watching the entire speech, it was the majority of which was about Commonwealth Day, right? I feel like this was just his subtle acknowledgement of what he's going through. I watched it a couple of times and I didn't take that away. I think he's just really showing that he is a little bit not at his best right now. But I think the echoes of the queen is interesting, but I think that he is during this bumpy time leading to the best of his ability. And that seems accurate to me in the wording.
Yeah, I also felt too, you know, Camilla was on vacation for a week after so many engagements that she was really carrying the torch for the royal family. And then we heard took a 1 week vacation and was kind of, you know, having a holiday to herself. And it is a good reminder they're in their mid to late 70s, 76.
Yes.
So it's just, you know, they are not young. They need these breaks and well-deserved. So
I know they're at retirement age, which would be typical. And instead, they're ramping up for the biggest jobs of their lives. It's so, we've talked about that before, that dichotomy.
All right, moving on to Meghan and Harry.
All right. We promise we're getting into our chat with Ellie soon, but we did want to touch on this amazing occasion where Meghan popped up at South by Southwest and surprise, so did Harry. This was all for International Women's Day. She was there for the Breaking Barriers, Shaping Narratives, How Women Lead on and off the screen panel, which was co-hosted by the Archwell Foundation, but also 19th News, which Meghan has worked with before and done a panel with before. She shared the stage with Katie Couric, Brooke Shields, so many others. I thought it was interesting watching it. If everyone hasn't checked it out, it's a really meaningful conversation, separate from Megan being there, just all the panelists. But the conversation really tied in with Megan's experiences, in particular the online bullying she faced while pregnant with Archie, but also her and Harry's work to stand up to internet hate and toxicity. The moderator specifically asks Megan at one point, how have you been able to manage the endless stream of social media toxicity that comes at you? And I wanted to play her response to that.
It's really interesting as I can reflect on it. I keep my distance from it right now just for my own well-being. But the bulk of the bullying and abuse that I was experiencing in social media and online was when I was pregnant with Archie and with Lily and with a newborn with each of them. And you just think about that and you to really wrap your head around why people would be so hateful. It's not catty, it's cruel. Why you would do that, and certainly when you're pregnant or you have a newborn, we all, as moms, you know it's such a tender and sacred time. And I think, you know, you could either succumb to it or nearly succumb to how painful that is. And maybe in some regards, because I was pregnant, that mammalian instinct just kicked in. So do everything you can to protect your child and as a result, protect yourself too. But, you know, I think as we look at what's happening in social media, there is so much work to be done in terms of keeping people safe. And that starts as we see what's happening with children and their exposure to things, but also just creating these habits that what I find the most disturbing, frankly, especially as a supporter of women, is how much of the hate is women completely spewing that to other women. And I cannot make sense of that.
I think, you know, it's always great to hear from Megan in her words. She also talked about her study with Moms First and the Gina Davis Institute, how accurate representation of moms on screen really matters. I will forever love the Reshma Soojani tie. I have been following Reshma's work with Moms First, but even what she was doing before that with Girls Who Code for years. I love that Megan is working with her. And also the Archwell Foundation funded this study with the Gina Davis Institute, and that's how the collaboration came to be.
I will say that really the part that you played for us just now with Megan's speech is just, I feel like we'd be remiss not to say it echoes of the Princess of Wales' treatment and conspiracy theories and all of the kind of nastiness that has bubbled up. And it really makes you think twice. I mean, women against women. It's really awful. And I just feel like Megan endured so much online cruelty and toxicity, and now to see it kind of happening to Kate, and not to say that those are the same, but it's just, it really is staggering.
Yeah, it's a dark, dark hole of hate online. It's scary. All right, well, more behind the scenes in Texas. Ahead of the panel, Harry and Megan were spotted out at Soho House in Austin. This is obviously where they had their first date, at Soho House in London, so I love that they kind of keep that tie. They also had a date night meal at the female-owned La Barbecue. What was most poignant to me to watch was their surprise visit to Uvalde shooting victim's family. This was the sister of Irma Garcia, the teacher that was killed in that shooting, and Megan brought a cake, sang happy birthday. Irma's nephew, John Martinez, posted to Twitter, and this made me laugh so hard, just all caps, "Meghan Markle and Prince Harry came to my house?" and a zillion question marks, because I think that would be everyone's reaction. I mean, it's just so surreal. But I love that she has stayed in touch with that family and the victims and the work that she does there, because I think it is really meaningful and shows that connection. Finally, I wanted to ask you, Roberta, her fashion. Did you have a favorite look? Because we saw so many incredible outfits from Megan. The details are really singing for me, like the husband shirt from Juleva Heritage, the favorite daughter Diana jacket that she wore for her visit to the San Antonio Welcome Project, which supports resettled Afghan women. Also, just her La Barbecue look, the like denim on denim with the white.
That's my favorite,
yeah,
for sure.
The denim on denim. I think that was mine, too. I love the two-tone shoes. That's like what I'm adding to my closet this spring, is the two-tone shoes.
Are those Chanel? Yes.
Those are Chanel, and those are past season. But I think M. Jemmy has a really great replica. So
I love the jeans she's wearing, and I looked up what they are.
Yeah, what's the brand?
I think that they're a Nina Bing, which I am now obsessed with. Can't afford, but
so
going
chic,
to
so
save
chic.
To see if they go on sale.
We're rattling off some quick, mostly Megan-related news tidbits that did crop up in the last week and a half. She supposedly hired Adele's stylist, Jamie Mizrahi, which is a Montecito neighbor. I don't know. That's still kind of in the rumor category. this is not a rumor. She officially won her defamation lawsuit brought by Samantha Markle. That's a huge win for Meghan and puts that all to bed. I think that that's fantastic. She also popped up on a ski trip with friends in Utah. This was just on Instagram. Her friend Heather Dorick shared some pics behind the scenes, and lo and behold, there was Meghan. So that, I think, is really fun. And I love the super puff Aritzia jacket. I feel like that's always been on my radar, and now I'm like, I kind of need that. Although we are...
You need it. I have one.
We are in transitional jacket weather. Are you feeling that right now? It's like 70 outside.
I know, and I need to break out my trench. I do wear the super puff the time. I feel like that's a jacket that will just never go on sale, so it doesn't matter when you buy it. But I do love it. I wish I'd bought a different color. I have like a camel color, and I don't know. There's like a thousand colors, so I just maybe wanted a different one, but I love it. All right, now for our long-awaited interview with journalist Ellie Hall.
Roros, it is an honor to welcome freelance journalist Ellie Hall to the podcast. You'll remember her impressive work as the former senior reporter and official royal correspondent for BuzzFeed News, a role that she held from 2013 until the newsroom shut down in April 2023. We have mentioned Ellie and her work countless times throughout our tenure on Royally Obsessed. In the wake of a zillion Kate Middleton conspiracy theories, we turn to her credible reporting once again, this time a piece published via Harvard's Nieman Lab about the timeline of events surrounding Kate, but also what's at the root of this and all royal messes, Palace Communications. Ellie, welcome to the podcast. Finally, long overdue.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're curious how many of your friends have been texting you nonstop, because that's been Roberta and my week for the last couple of days.
People I haven't heard from in years.
Yes, exactly.
The woodwork.
People I haven't heard from in years. Like, hey, so royal family. It was my birthday yesterday. And I got to tell you, thank you. A lot of people snuck in like, hey, happy birthday. So can you tell me what's going on?
Inappropriate. That's not okay.
A little inappropriate, but I understand.
But it's also fun to dissect with as many people want to talk about it.
I can't put it into a text. I'm sure you can't either. Where do you begin? How are you supposed to start this? It's why I'm glad I have my link. I can just send my link to people.
I think you succinctly described the overwhelm I feel when I get the text, is that it's too much for a text. And then we don't have time for phone calls with all the news gathering right now.
I'm going to start just forwarding Ellie's link along for the Nieman Lab to everyone that reaches out.
I'm happy because it has the sort of, I've been told, well, some people just go right to the timeline, but the Q&A up top, I've been told, has been really helpful for some people. So,
all right. Well, we want to start by looking at the photo debacle of this week first. So we have that Mother's Day photo controversy that you added to the Nieman Lab timeline and Kate's public apology. What did you make of all that?
Nobody saw it coming. I suspected that an image might have been released just to sort of quell all of the rumors, but very obvious, the photo that was supposed to make everything stop made everything 1,000 times worse. As a reporter, just in general, I've never seen any sort of kill order and photo recall thing that started going down on Sunday night. I was just on my phone checking Twitter in shock as this just kept coming in, because you can't think of anything that would make the conspiracy theory seem even more credible than, oh my God, this photo has been doctored. The proof of life that we were all looking for isn't really there. What's going on? Yeah, that was completely unexpected. And I just looked at it Sunday night and I went, wow, tomorrow is going to be absolutely insane.
Yeah.
We all know, obviously, the phrase they always use is that Kate is a keen amateur photographer. But
yes,
I was very surprised to see that she posted that personalized message saying that she was the one doing the editing and this was her fault. I actually said to a friend of mine, wow, they really threw Kate under the bus, didn't they?
That's how we felt as well. We felt really taken aback by that.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so William took the photo. We're fine with that. It sort of seemed like, okay, when everyone will be happy with the photo, we're going to give him some credit. But you can't tell me, especially when she is recovering from surgery with 3 children and the work that she does, that she has time to just sit down and fool around on Adobe Photoshop. Also, Adobe Photoshop is hard. Like, you have to, I mean, obviously we saw in this photo what happens when you're not an expert at it, but the idea that someone, they obviously have a graphic designer on their team. They obviously have someone who has an expertise in this. Really? We're going to say that this was Kate? She did this? The princess? So that was the other element that just really raised a whole bunch of flags in my brain.
Yeah. But so how do you think Kensington Palace allowed this, which was in theory on Mother's Day in the UK, a photo designed to quell conspiracy theories amid this huge health crisis for Kate? How did they allow it to go so far off the rails?
So there's been some good reporting that's come out today. The Telegraph has a new story and the Times has a new story. And we have the metadata from the camera that shows it was edited first on Friday night and then edited on Saturday morning. The metadata does not show when it was taken. It shows where it was taken, which is Adelaide Cottage, as we all knew. But the impression the Times story gives is that nobody caught this, that the image was given to the comms team. The comms team sent it out and they were completely unaware when it began to be pulled. Now, obviously, we don't know this. And as I get into in my Nieman Lab story, this is one of those things that is sourced to palace aides and courtiers and things like that. So nobody's going on the record, but it's inconceivable to me that nobody would have looked at this and seen. I mean, my mom saw obvious errors when I told her where to look. I said, oh, yeah, look at Charlotte's sleeve right there and look at the hair and everything and look at the pattern on Louis's sweater. If it's this obvious, how could no one in the comms office catch it?
Yeah.
And it just, you know, obviously the storm went from there. And the Times story said that it was Kate's decision to own up to it, that she had done the editing and she felt bad about it. She wanted it to be the best photo possible, which 100% everybody understands. And as everyone's seen, like there have been issues. People have said in the past, you know, oh, it looks like these images were photoshopped. These images were photoshopped that were given as handouts to the media. But the thing that just stuck in my mind was, what is wrong with this one? Like, there have been images released that we've seen some wonky Photoshop details on. What is going on here? What did they do? What did they miss? Was it many items spliced together? And then that brings us to the question of, why won't Kensington Palace release the original image?
Do you feel that they should? What would that benefit, I guess, if they did?
Even if it's an unflattering image of the kids, all they're trying to do now, I would guess, is stop these conspiracy theories, because they keep getting more and more out of hand. You've seen them. We've all seen them. It's insane. You've got everything from domestic violence to murder to conspiracy to murder to in a coma, you know, just any theory you can think of, it's there. And, you know, when people can credibly say, this is an old photo, or we photoshopped the princess into this photo because there's actually some deep, dark conspiracy going on. If there's anything that someone can point to that gives that a little bit of backup, that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
So it seems like releasing the raw image would make sense, but who knows? Maybe it was taken earlier.
Yeah. And just to like pull back even beyond the photo controversy, you talked in your piece about how unique this situation with Kate's health crisis has also been, where the Kensington Palace has gone on the record 3 times to refute speculation over this and what is basically gossip, which in your experience as a reporter is something that they never gave credence to in the past. And I think, you know, you mentioned the coma theory, and that was that Spanish reporter, and that gave that a lot of air. Like it lifted that and made it, I hadn't heard about it until I saw the statement.
Yeah, it's called the Streisand effect. If you point at something and you say, hey, this is wrong, it's only going to call more attention to it. The fact that that wasn't just on the record cited to a spokesperson, but that we had an actual quote, that was mind-boggling to me. And then, you know, the reporter doubled down and said, I'm not backing down on this. I've touched a nerve. The palace is upset that I figured out what's going on. And I have checked. She has not provided any updates recently, but okay. I'm dying to see what she has to say now.
Yeah.
I wish I spoke Spanish so I could just like monitor her TV show 24/7.
I know. But it's unusual that they've spoken up and given so many statements on what is basically gossip.
So much. Yeah. I mean, I wrote this in my piece for Nieman Lab, but when Queen Elizabeth was still alive, I had a conversation with someone in her press office. I knew it was a futile mission, but like trying to get them to just tell me like, the queen is still alive, please. I eventually was able to get around that by going to the prime minister's office and confirming that she'd had the call with the prime minister. So we were able to prove her life, you know, in the story. But the press officers in this office just said, we are not setting a precedent where we're going to respond to gossip. It doesn't matter if the entire world is, you know, speculating about the queen's health. It doesn't matter if it seems so outlandish, because I said, you know, if it's so outlandish, why don't you just deny it?
Yeah, shut it down.
Yeah, just make it go away. We do not want to set a precedent that we're going to respond to online speculation and gossip. So when I saw the comments coming out in response the day after William ditching the memorial service, I was incredibly surprised that they had a spokesperson going on the record and just saying everything's fine. And then to People Magazine, I saw this great tweet. Someone had retweeted the palace's statement. I think it was to Page Six or something, and said, why are they taking that tone with us? And that was something that I've noticed too. The palace is really taking a sort of how dare you, shame on you approach to this with the public.
Yeah.
And one thing I've seen as I've gone into this conspiracy theory laden world is we've reached a point where people are genuinely worried about Kate. And even the photo of her yesterday, why wasn't she facing the cameras? Small little things like that. Each new development, more questions are raised about why aren't they just showing us that she's fine? Why aren't they just showing us that, you know, yeah, she's still recovering. The point people keep making is we don't want her personal medical information. No one wants that. She has a perfect right to privacy, but we're at a point now where people think she might be in severe medical distress. She might be the victim of something, and that's bad. When the conspiracy theory has reached that point where it's gone beyond, you know, people who follow the royals very closely, like we do, having these theories and becoming invested to such an extent, I think her name has been trending on Twitter for a straight week now. And
yeah,
the whole world is covering this. We talked at the beginning of the podcast. We're getting texts from friends we haven't heard from in years. This is one of the biggest stories in the world.
Yeah.
And the palace could have taken so many steps to shut this down earlier. Like, this is on them. If you are going to point the finger for this crisis at any person, it's definitely not Kate.
And it's clear, too, from your Queen example, too, that the Buckingham Palace press strategy is different from the Kensington Palace press strategy. And you note that in your piece for Demon Lab as well, how those differ. And they're different offices and different teams. So I want to go back for 1 second to the metadata, because it doesn't tell us when the photo was actually taken, but you mentioned Friday and Saturday. What was that? Was that in relation to the...
Oh, yeah, that was editing. So the metadata that it had been saved in Adobe Photoshop on a Mac computer on Friday night and then on Saturday morning. So we couldn't see when it was taken, but we know when it was saved in Adobe Photoshop, and we know that they use Macs, and I use Macs, so I'm happy to hear the palace does.
And the type of camera, right? Did you read that?
Oh, yeah. It's a very expensive camera and a very expensive lens.
Like a professional camera.
Yeah. Sky News interviewed a photographer who uses it. It's professional. It's top of the line. It's a little old, but it's still something that professional photographers use.
That's fascinating. Jumping back, so in the Wales's defense, they're not the only royal family members to make an intense effort to control their image in the wake of paparazzi coverage. Of course, William and Harry have been vehement about this following their mother, Princess Diana's death. Do you think, Ellie, that this photo error will mean the end of family distributed pics?
That's the real question. So I am very curious to see how this is going to play out. Biggest thing I've seen so far is CNN reported that they were conducting a review of all handout images that have been given to them by the royal family in the past. Haven't seen any updates on that, but a good friend and former colleague of mine is on the team, leads the team that does this sort of investigation. So if there's something there, he will find it. And I have seen among the people who are really like very staunchly defending Kate and William for all of this that, you know, maybe they will choose not to give these handout photos anymore. The handout photos help them more than they help the press. That's the whole point of them, especially when it has to do with the kids. And we all know that's the Wales' biggest concern, is to make sure their kids have a normal life and a normal upbringing. If we don't get those birthday photos of the kids, if we don't get those family images, I can definitely see a situation where the press wants to reevaluate that deal. That's sort of gentleman's agreement that's existed between Fleet Street and the royal family for a long time. Because obviously people want to know about the kids. People love the kids, but you got to feed the beast. And so far the handout system has been the best way to feed the beast. But if the media can't trust what's going on anymore, that raises a whole bunch of questions. And you know, just from what we've seen, William and Kate do not want to go back to the cattle call photo calls that went on when William and Harry were kids. You know, we've all seen them, like little baby William walking.
Yeah, they're horrible. Yeah.
Huge crowd. Yeah. And maybe the press would really want to go back to that if we can't trust the photos that are being taken. And that would not be good for the kids. And I'm sure William would absolutely not want that to happen to his kids at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that's it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. We did want to just touch on a quick timeline of some of the key moments that have caused the biggest waves of speculation. You know, you talked about William pulling out of King Constantine's memorial service. The Trooping the Colour announcement was really unique where, you know, Kate was going to be participating in that military occasion. And then there was a retraction of that. Also, Kate not wearing her wedding ring in this. That was got a big flurry. Even just King Charles's public visibility over his diagnosis versus Kate's. What has caught you the most off guard as you go through the timeline that you created as you're reading? Because you do such a searing account. I mean, a very robust account of every single moment. And it's so wonderful, honestly, to read just to kind of see that the stark facts of it all. What makes your ears perk up?
One of the things that has been the most significant to me was Buckingham Palace's in the announcement announcing the king's cancer diagnosis. There's a line that they were making this information public to prevent speculation. They said, "We are preventing speculation," while at the same time not specifying what type of cancer the king has.
Yeah.
So that was just a great little PR move. And it seemed to be a poke at Kensington Palace about the level of speculation and the level of secrecy surrounding everything that's having to do with Kate. Because look, they were just able to get the press off their backs without revealing any personal medical information. See what we can do. Isn't it easy? That is something that I keep going back to in my mind.
Yeah.
And now we've reached a point where we're starting to get those stories that as royal watchers, we're very used to about what's going on behind the scenes, what Kate's eating, who's doing the school runs, that kind of thing. But there weren't many of those for a long time. And it's interesting to see what sort of tabloidy stories are popping up now and what people are writing, because it almost seems like within the past week, there's been a wake-up call. They're like, oh, people, we could write more about this now. Like, this is something that we've finally been given a green light, a go-ahead to start doing more reporting on this. And that's been really interesting. I've definitely been keeping an eye on what's coming out and how people are reporting on it. It's also been really fun to watch people tie themselves into knots, trying to both talk about the conspiracy theories without mentioning them and going, you know, putting publishing these things that, you know, shame on you for all of this, but nothing that really calls the palace out. And it's been very interesting to see the beginnings of people calling the palace out. The calls that we've seen over the past 24 hours for the original image to be released. I have this in my Neiman Lab story. I was shocked to see that People magazine had a cover like attacking the palace for a lack of transparency.
Yeah.
If you've lost People magazine, you've lost the kingdom. Like,
yeah.
You can't think, and that's true for the royals that are royals. It's true for Meghan and Harry. Like they are positive. Yeah. You go to them. They will print your press release. Let's go. So that was a very, very surprising to me. And I think we're only going to see that sort of thing ratchet up until the palace is able to absolutely squash this. And now the question is, how could they? Like, they released a photo that they thought was going to do the job. And that was, I think, either the Times or the Telegraph story made it very clear that staffers were not expecting anything. And they were very taken by surprise when this whole thing started going down.
It's a runaway train, it seems like, for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, now the question is, what can they do? What can the palace do to shut this down? And will they be believed now?
I know.
I'm glad that you pointed out that lack of coverage in the beginning, because we did feel that too, almost like there was a gag order on some of the fluffier stories written by the press. So
100%.
Just so interesting, that invisible contract at work.
Can I give my little tinfoil theory?
Yeah.
I think the palace used the Mother's Day photo as a carrot to keep them from publishing the TMZ photo. I mean, the fact that the Sun wouldn't publish that backbreed photo, the Sun normally is very happy to do that kind of thing. I think we know, thanks to some comments from royal reporters, that there was tremendous pressure exerted by the palace. But I really think, hey guys, you're about to get a photo, a great photo. Get your front pages for Sunday ready to go for this. Okay. What they were promised didn't really materialize.
Spectacularly
instead of this photo, now you've got this huge huge scandal. And I would imagine there are probably some editors over in the UK who are a little unhappy that they listened to the palace, because they could have done lots of traffic, lots of sold papers with those images of Kate. They listened to the palace, didn't run them. Then they had unpleasant consequences.
That begs the question, what does the palace not want us to see about a photo of Kate and Carol in the car? That's what I'm just so confused by. It's all these machinations behind the scenes. But so, Ellie, as a journalist, there's this intense level of online speculation that we've already touched on. And in your piece, you talk about the range of reactions. There's humorous, like the Glasgow Willy Wonka memes, to actual conspiracy theories like the Taylor Swift and Biden ones that we saw, you know, just around the Super Bowl. Crazy. And genuine levels of concern as well. Do you feel that genuine concern is warranted, or are we all being a bit unhinged?
Well, I mean, the internet is always unhinged. Let's be real. There's always an element of that. People love an information void, and this is a big information void. It leaves lots of room, lots of space to play and throw these crazy ideas around. I think the point everyone keeps coming back to is, why is the palace PR team operating this way?
Yeah.
It's so easy. It's so easy to not make these mistakes. It would be so easy for none of this to have happened. They could have put out a statement that was, you know, a tweet signed with a C weeks ago, just thanking people. All these little things that would have taken the pressure off and made people be like, oh, okay, all right, Kate's recovering. Great. We love Kate.
Mm-hmm.
All of the questions about the PR strategy and what information is being given to the public and when, and then, as I get into in my piece, the questions about what the media is covering and why the media isn't covering certain things, specifically the British media, those two things raise a lot of questions too. Are we all insane? Probably, likely. Yeah. I mean, I once would have just said, like, we'll see Kate at Easter and everything will be fine. And all of the craziness will calm down and we'll go back to normal. But things keep happening.
Yeah.
That make conspiracy theories seem not so outlandish. And that's really weird when it comes to things for the royal family. They tend to be pretty good at either ignoring these things or shutting these things down or both. And now we're in a situation where every single move that they make registers more questions. And obviously, as you know, when you have the eyes of the world on you, every little detail, every little element of everything you do is going to be cross-examined, and people will find something there to support their theory.
Yeah.
And you can see this videos of William at the investiture, his first event after, I think it was after, yeah, either the cancer diagnosis or Kate returning home. That's been dissected by online sleuths, and lots of theories have emerged from analysis of that video. And you can't address these things now. Things have gotten so out of control that people will seize upon anything to support their theory, and they are.
Well, and I think it leads to our final question, which you already mentioned a little bit, but just where do we go from here? Because I do feel like I was really hitching my wagon to this. Like, I took the palace's statement in January, like, we'll see her after Easter. I like put that kind of in my mental calendar. And now it's like, just, we're in a totally different phase with all of this. But so how do Kate and William recover from this debacle, I guess? Is it that we're just waiting until Easter and then we all have sort of the sanity restored, or because we still have a long gap? Like, a lot of times with these royal crises, you have the next day, there's a royal event and it wipes those headlines off the pages, right? But we don't have that still. And it might not even be directly after Easter. That's something Roberta and I have been talking about. It said we'll see her likely after Easter, but that is still pretty vague.
It really depends, I think, on how they want to play this. Are they going to keep ignoring this and just hope it goes away? Okay, that might work. That's a strategy that's worked for them in the past, but we're in the end game now. Like, this is not a situation that any of us have ever seen. And
yeah,
it's really true. You can see this because we have these, you know, 20 plus year veterans of royal reporting going, we have no idea what's going on. Like, don't come to us. We're theorizing just as much as y'all are. And I feel like people want to see Kate. The public wants to see Kate and make sure she's okay. But at the same time, it feels almost as if she's an animal in the zoo. If we're talking about, okay, Kate, go out there, walk a lap around Kensington Palace, and then, you know, wave to some people, and then come back in and you can put your sweatpants back on. I mean, that's dehumanizing.
Well, and that feels also like the question I have, and I'm curious for your take on this. Like, what would make you feel better. Like, I don't, that's where, as royal watchers, like, I'm not sure what makes me feel better after all this.
No, I mean, obviously you don't want more invasive paparazzi photos.
No.
Because that's bad for everybody and it's bad for the family. You don't want, as I said, the sort of dehumanizing solution that makes Kate feel like a zoo animal.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is the thing. I think everyone is wondering, okay, how do they resolve this? How does this end? I don't know.
Yeah.
Every time I think it could end, something happens and then it doesn't end and then it gets worse.
Yeah. Our final thought, are you concerned about Carol and Mike Middleton? I love that that comes up in your piece.
Just all these small little things. That's what I had a lot of fun. And also it drove me a little insane putting this timeline together because I had to go deep and see what things people were mentioning that were significant. But it's true, you know, they don't hate the cameras. And why you would imagine that with Kate having a health crisis, somebody would have staked out Bucklebury. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
No images of them leaving their compound.
Another head scratcher.
Fascinating.
I surprised and not surprised to see that it was Kate and her mom driving. I was like, oh, all right, there you are, Carol. Been wondering where you've been. There you are.
Oh my gosh. Well, Ellie, we are, again, so privileged to have you be a part of our show this week. And we will be following your reporting to very closely. And just, I guess, you know, all of us keeping up with what transpires in the next coming weeks too.
Who knows? That's how it is. Who knows?
And we know to keep up with you, please tell us where we should follow along. Is Twitter the best or X? Do we call it X now?
Twitter X is the best place. I was off it for a while, but all of this has brought me back on. So,
okay.
She's back.
I will be posting links to my stories and anywhere that I go to talk about this on Twitter.
And that's at Ellie V. Hall for anyone to follow on X. And you can read Ellie's story on the Nieman Lab, neimanlab.org.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, obviously, this is a story that continues to unfold, but we are so privileged to have Ellie's thoughts on the matter.
It's time for the Royal Highs and Lows.
Before we adjourn the Royal Pod, our highs and lows, my low is just the palace comms team. I mean, specifically Kensington Palace. I feel like Kate was made to be the scapegoat. I may get some hate for saying that, but I really truly believe that she was not the one photoshopping. And I just have my doubts. I have my serious doubts that she really did such a bad edit job because she's so good at everything. There's no way that she would half anything.
Yeah, I know. It did feel like she was the fall person with that C on Instagram. I think my low, I've been like going back and forth on saying this, but just the whole where's Kate debate, you know, because I think let's just say that worst case, she is quite ill and navigating something awful. This collective thirst for information has transcended paparazzi pics for me and feels so much worse. And you and I have talked a lot about this. I mean, of course, Kensington Palace has fanned the flames with the Mother's Day photo that they shared, but I just feel like the pressure on Kate is unparalleled. And let's say the simplest thing is true and she really is just sick. We punish the royal family for not yielding to health and mental health needs and giving people a break when they ask for it. And what if this was their attempt to do that? And we just, as voyeurs, royal voyeurs, it feels like we won't allow it. It's just, I'm grappling with those feelings, I guess, is my point.
I totally agree. I feel like if this was one big social experiment, we as humanity failed spectacularly because we could not afford her any privacy. It's like when they preach about mental health too, and that's one of their platforms that they're, I don't know, it's just all very confounding. My high this week, though,
much
on a lighter note is
much
that
lighter
Kate's,
note.
You know that I could not go an episode without mentioning this, which is that Kate's brother, James Middleton, officially announced his book. It's called Meet Ella, the Dog Who Saved My Life. It's out September of this year. And Tatler had the exclusive. They said, quote, it's a tender, warm-hearted, and sometimes devastating book. I'm just excited for the insights into he and Elise's relationship, Inigo, their baby boy, and their meet cute. I feel like it's going to be really wonderful. I can't wait to read.
Podcast invitation forthcoming to James. Worth an ask. No, I'm excited to read it too. All right, my high is Queen Camilla getting the Barbie doll treatment and the subsequent social media video recap, which we always talk about their kind of handling of social media, the Queen and Charles specifically. But this doll was presented to Camilla at the Women of the World reception, which was held at Buckingham Palace this week. Camilla has a cape coat, her Barbie doll version, and they were matching for the reception. I just love that. And then the social media video to the Dance the Night Away from Barbie, the movie. It just, I guess I'm still riding high from the Ryan Gosling Oscars performance, but I just love this Barbie tie-in this week.
Me too. And not that it's a race, but I feel like if it was, Buckingham Palace is beating Kensington Palace by a lot. Like, it's just like the social media game for Buckingham Palace is so strong, and Kensington Palace needs to get it together. It's
just get there. Yeah. Whatever's going on, sort
something
out.
Something has to be said. Just a reminder before we close, please leave us a royal rating. We would love 5 stars wherever you listen. This week, the review is from Spotify. They say, this is my absolute favorite podcast, and at this point, listening to it is my weekly ritual. Never stop recording. From Joe. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
also, Joe. Subscribe so you never miss an episode, and follow us on Instagram at Royally Obsessed Podcast. And till next week,
God save the pod.
Her Majesties of Royally Obsessed have retired for this episode. God save the pod. And if you fancy the podcast, give Royally Obsessed the royal rating of 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at Royally Obsessed Podcast and join our Facebook group, Royally Obsessed. Royally Obsessed is a Gallery Podcast production.